Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us from growinginthegarden.com, Vegetable Gardening in Arizona, 2026 Guide for Desert Gardeners by Angela Judd. Vegetable gardening in Arizona can feel like learning a whole new set of rules, especially in the low desert. The timing on seed packets, tips that work in cooler climates, and even zone-based advice often miss the mark here. But once you understand what our desert conditions demand and adjust your approach, you can grow an abundant, productive vegetable garden in the low desert of Arizona. The low desert refers to Arizona's warmer, lower elevation desert areas, generally below about 3,500 feet, including places like Phoenix, Mesa, and Tucson, where summers are long and intensely hot, and winters are mild. Growing a successful vegetable garden in Arizona is certainly possible. However, it is important to understand that Arizona has a unique climate for gardening with distinct benefits and challenges. Some of the benefits of vegetable gardening in Arizona: abundant citrus. Only two other states, Florida and California, grow citrus commercially. Ability to garden outdoors year-round. Abundant sunshine, necessary for all living things. Here are a few of the challenges of vegetable gardening in Arizona. Extreme heat. A few vegetables, okra, Malabar spinach, Armenian cucumbers, tolerate the heat and continue producing. Some die and others go dormant, only to take off again when the humidity sets in late July or August. Low humidity. Many desert-adapted plants, such as cactus, succulents, and plants with waxy leaves, are adapted to less humidity. However, most vegetables and garden plants need more moisture in the air to grow well in the low desert of Arizona. Native clay soil is great for desert-adapted plants and contains many minerals. However, it is alkaline and low in organic matter. Most garden plants prefer slightly acidic soil and need the added nutrients of organic matter. Caliche causes several problems, including poor drainage. Seven principles for successful vegetable gardening in Arizona. Growing a successful vegetable garden in Arizona is possible when you understand these seven principles. If you're just getting started with gardening, this beginner's guide is a great place to begin. It pulls together my most helpful resources for new gardeners and walks you through the first steps toward a thriving garden. First, choose the best location for your garden. Vegetable gardens need at least 6 hours of sun to grow and thrive. We have an abundance of sun, but the type of sunlight we get varies. Morning sun is ideal for a vegetable garden. Its rays are strong and cool. The harsh afternoon sun is harder on gardens in the summer. Take a look around your yard at sunrise and notice where morning light first hits your garden, and then if you can, plant there. If your garden area gets afternoon sun, you will probably need to provide some shade for certain plants during the summer. Check sun exposure using Sunseeker app or similar. This allows you to see the amount of sunlight each area receives. Not sure how much sun your veggies need? Check out this guide on which vegetables need shade and which thrive in full sun to help your garden thrive. There should also be a water source nearby or within a hose distance. Add a small butterfly habitat using the plants in my Arizona Butterfly Garden Guide. Plant veggies near this habitat to increase pollination and balance pests. Next on the list, use the best type of soil to plant vegetables in Arizona. It is possible to grow vegetables in the native soil. However, most native soil is best adapted to growing native plants, not garden vegetables. Because Arizona's growing seasons are shorter, we ask a lot of the vegetables we grow. They need to sprout, grow, and produce during a short amount of time. For the best chance of success, it's important to give plants what they need to thrive in desert conditions. Continue adding compost and organic matter each season, and the soil in your raised beds will improve each year. Next, plant vegetables at the right time in Arizona. Gardening in Arizona is different, but not impossible. We have different seasons than most. Zone maps on the back of seed packets and other zone maps don't usually work here. Instead of one long growing season, we have three shorter planting seasons. First, cool season crops grow from around September to March. Second, warm season crops grow from about February through May. And third, monsoon planting begins with the increased rain and humidity of July or August. Use a research-based planting guide designed for the low desert to take the guesswork out of when to plant during each of these different seasons. Planting the right crop at the right time will increase the chance of success. Number 4. Select the appropriate varieties of vegetables when gardening in Arizona. Choose short season crops. When you have a choice between two crops and one has shorter days to harvest, go with the shorter one. The low desert of Arizona has several growing seasons, but the seasons are shorter and crops have less time to produce. Smaller varieties of tomatoes and melons often outperform their larger counterparts. Choose plants adapted to our growing conditions in Arizona. Native Seed Search offers arid-adapted seed varieties that tolerate the heat and drought of an Arizona summer better than varieties better suited to other regions. I grow Chimayo melons and Hopi yellow watermelons from Native Seed Search each year. Number 5 on the list of 7 principles for successful vegetable gardening in Arizona: take advantage of microclimates in your yard. Some parts of the yard will be warmer or cooler than others. Use those areas to your advantage by growing plants whose requirements match up to the specific microclimate available. Noticing your yard which areas receive the most sun and shade during different seasons of the year. Learn the sun requirements and heat tolerance of different plants. Consider adding shade parts of the garden that need it during the hottest times of the year. Take advantage of the shade provided by larger plants to interplant different crops. Number 6. Water your Arizona vegetable garden correctly. Vegetables and fruits do not produce well if they are stressed. Problems in the garden can often be traced back to watering, not enough, too much, or inconsistent watering. Plants become stressed and are more prone to diseases and insects. Here are some general principles for watering your vegetable garden in Arizona. Spend time in your garden each day. You'll notice the watering needs of your plants and be alerted to issues with your watering system. Pay attention to the weather. Plants require more water when it is dry, windy, and in the summer heat. During the summer in hot areas like Arizona, raised bed gardens often need watering every day. Other times of the year, the raised beds may only need to be watered 1 to 2 times a week. Adjust the frequency of the timer for seasonal conditions. Next, water deep enough to moisten the plant's entire root system each time you water. Adjust the frequency of watering, not the duration of watering. Water in the morning. Wilted leaves at midday don't necessarily mean a plant needs water. Always test soil a couple of inches deep to see if soil is dry before giving droopy plants more water. They'll probably recover once the sun goes down. Water the soil, not the leaves of plants. This saves water as well as prevents many plants from disease. Number 7. Mulch garden each season, especially in the summer. Add a 3-inch layer of organic mulch on top of the soil around your vegetables. Mulching helps an Arizona vegetable garden in several ways. Mulching helps prevent weeds, which can harbor pests and diseases and compete for limited resources of nutrients, light, and water. A thick layer of mulch helps protect roots from extremes in temperatures, and mulching helps preserve moisture. Now, here are some vegetable gardening frequently asked questions. What vegetables grow best in Arizona's low desert? Vegetables that thrive in our climate include heat-tolerant crops like okra, melons, eggplant, and yard-long beans in the summer, and cool-season favorites like lettuce, carrots, broccoli, and peas in the fall and winter. Timing is everything. When's the best time to plant vegetables in Arizona? Arizona has 2 main planting seasons, fall and winter, October and November for cool season crops, spring, February to April for warm season crops. Use a local planting guide to match your planting to the correct season. How do you grow vegetables in Arizona's extreme heat? Plan around the heat. plant at the right time, use shade cloth when needed, mulch well, and water deeply and consistently. It's often best to plant a cover crop during the hottest months or focus on heat-adapted crops. One of the best drought-tolerant vegetables for Arizona gardens. Some good options include tepary beans, Armenian cucumbers, sweet potatoes, and black-eyed peas. These crops are adapted to hot, dry conditions and often require less water once established. How often should I water a vegetable garden in Arizona? Water deeply and infrequently. During hot weather, most gardens need water every 1 to 3 days, depending on the soil, mulch, and weather. Always check the soil before watering. What is the best soil mix for growing vegetables in Arizona? Use well-draining soil rich in compost and organic matter. Raised bed mixes with worm castings and compost work well. Native soil usually needs improvement before planting. Do I need shade cloth for my Arizona vegetable garden? Yes, especially in late spring and summer. Shade cloth can protect tender plants from intense sun and help reduce water loss. A 50% shade cloth is usually best. Which vegetables can I plant during Arizona's monsoon season? Monsoon season is a good time to start crops like tomatoes, peppers, squash, and pumpkins. Warm temperatures and increased humidity help seeds sprout and grow quickly. Can you grow vegetables year-round in Arizona? Yes, with the right timing and plant selection, you can grow vegetables nearly every month of the year in the low desert. It's one of the advantages of gardening here. What are common mistakes when starting a vegetable garden in Arizona? Planting at the wrong time, overwatering or underwatering, using poor soil or skipping adding organic matter like compost and worm castings, not using mulch, ignoring sun exposure and microclimates, giving up too quickly. Gardening here takes practice and patience. Also from growinginthegarden.com, soil, compost, and fertilizing. Healthy soil is the heart of any productive garden. Here, you'll learn how to build fertile raised bed soil, use in-bed vermicomposting and worm castings, and grow cover crops that improve soil structure and nutrients. You'll also find simple fertilizer options, including comfrey tea for when plants need a quick boost. Plus, learn water-wise methods for desert gardening that conserve moisture without sacrificing productivity. First on the list, How to Fix Hydrophobic Soil in the Desert Garden by Angela Judd. If you've ever watered a plant and watched the water bead up on the surface or run straight through the container or garden bed without soaking in, you have seen hydrophobic soil in action. It is soil that repels water instead of absorbing it. This can be confusing and frustrating because you're watering, but the moisture is not reaching the soil or the roots that need it. The good news is that with patience and a few changes in how you water and care for the soil, you can help hydrophobic soil start accepting and holding water again. Hydrophobic soil repels water, causing it to bead and run off. This condition is common in desert gardens. Factors like intense heat, sandy soils, and surface crusting increase the likelihood of hydrophobic soil. To fix hydrophobic soil, gently break the surface, water in cycles, and add compost to improve absorption. Mulching and maintaining consistent moisture help prevent the recurrence of hydrophobic soil. Gradual improvement occurs over time with diligent care. Expect weeks to months for significant changes. So what is hydrophobic soil? Hydrophobic soil is soil whose particles repel water instead of absorbing it. Water forms beads on the surface and runs off instead of soaking in, even when the soil looks very dry. A thin layer of water-repellent soil is often found at or just below the surface. This water repellency is usually caused by waxy, water-repellent organic compounds that coat soil particles. These compounds can come from decomposing plant material, certain plants with waxy leaves, soil microbes, or fire. They are especially likely to coat coarse sand particles where there is not much clay or organic matter to help hold moisture. When soil gets very dry, air fills the pores and those waxy coatings harden. The next time you water, the water has a hard time moving into the soil and tends to run off or move sideways instead. So why is hydrophobic soil common in desert gardens? Hydrophobic soil can happen anywhere, but several desert conditions make it more likely. Long dry periods and intense heat. In hot, arid climates, soil often dries out completely between rains or irrigations. This repeated dry down bakes the surface. Sandy or decomposed granite soils. Coarse soils with very low organic matter are more prone to water repellency because there is less fine material and humus to help hold moisture and break down hydrophobic compounds. Bare soil. Areas left unplanted and uncovered are exposed to direct sun, wind, and heat. Organic debris that accumulates on the surface can decompose into waxy compounds that move into the top layer and increase water repellency. Compaction and crusting. Foot traffic, heavy equipment, or repeated overhead watering can compact the surface and create a crust. This crust tends to concentrate hydrophobic compounds and makes it even harder for water to enter. In many desert yards, that means native, unamended strips of dirt that have stayed dry for years are likely to be hydrophobic. If you are preparing a new garden in this type of soil, it helps to combine the steps in this post with the tips in my post about getting your soil ready for planting. How to tell if your soil is hydrophobic. You do not need a lab test to see if soil is water repellent. A couple of simple tests will give you a good idea. First, drop test. Take a dry clod of soil from the problem area. Place a few drops of water on the surface. Watch how long it takes the drops to soak in. If the drops sit there for more than 30 seconds or bead up and roll away, the soil is at least somewhat hydrophobic. In severe cases, drops can sit for several minutes without soaking in. Next, the shallow basin test. Smooth the surface and create a shallow basin or furrow. Pour in a small amount of water and watch. If the water quickly disappears sideways or runs out of the basin without wetting the top inch or two of soil, you're dealing with water-repellent soil. Step by step, how to fix hydrophobic soil. Step 1. Gently break up the surface and create pathways. Your first goal is to help water get past the crusted water-repellent surface. You are trying to slow the water down and encourage it to move into the soil instead of running off or beading up. Use a garden fork, broad fork, or hand cultivator to gently loosen the soil 4 to 8 inches deep. Rock the tool back and forth to open cracks rather than turning the soil into powder. This keeps the structure and pore spaces intact while opening channels for water. Create shallow basins, furrows, or pockets along the bed so water is held in place instead of running off. If you garden in a hot, dry climate, this idea of slowing the water down and giving it a path in is also a key part of sunken garden beds and water-wise design. For a deeper dive into that, see my post on sunken garden beds for desert gardens. Step 2, re-wet slowly and in cycles. Trying to fix hydrophobic soil with one long watering usually just sends water off the bed and down the path. Instead, use short, repeated watering cycles. Water gently for 5 to 10 minutes and turn the water off and let it sit for 20 to 30 minutes. Repeat this cycle 2 to 4 times. Each small pulse of water has time to soak in before the next one arrives. Use a low pressure setting on the hose, drip line, soaker hoses, or an Oya instead of a hard spray that causes runoff. Subsurface options like Oyas and buried drip can be helpful because they deliver water just below the most water-repellent layer. Repeat step 1 by loosening the soil and making pathways within the soil for the water. In very stubborn small areas, you can lay a piece of wet burlap, cardboard, or an old towel on top of the soil and water through it. The fabric breaks the surface tension, slows the water down, and spreads the water so it does not bead up as easily. Step 3. Add compost and organic matter on top. Spread 1 to 3 inches of well-finished compost over the surface and water through it. Compost and worm castings provide food for soil microbes that slowly break down the waxy coatings, causing the water repellency. Avoid mixing large amounts of fresh wood chips or bark into the soil. Keep coarse mulch on top, not turned in, so it does not add more hydrophobic material inside the profile. Step 4. Mulch to keep the soil from drying out again. Add 2 to 4 inches of mulch over the composted surface. Fine wood chips, shredded leaves, and similar materials are good options. Keep mulch a few inches away from the base of plants, but cover all exposed soil. Mulch keeps the surface from baking and helps maintain pore spaces so water can get in next time you irrigate. For more details about what to use and how thick to apply mulch in a hot, dry climate, see my post about mulching your garden. Step 5. Use wetting agents carefully. You will often hear gardeners recommend a squirt of dish soap to fix water-repellent soil. The idea comes from how wetting agents work. Wetting agents are surfactants. They lower the surface tension of water so it can spread across and into hydrophobic soil more easily. This can help that first deep watering soak instead of running off. There are a few options to consider. Recommended, use natural surfactants such as yucca. Yucca extract contains natural saponins that act as mild surfactants. These are widely used in organic systems to help water and nutrients move more evenly through the soil. If you prefer organic inputs, yucca-based products can be a good option for stubborn hydrophobic patches, especially when combined with compost and mulch. Labeled soil wetting agents. Many products sold for lawns and landscape beds are soil wetting agents. These are designed for use on soil and are often used to treat hydrophobic sands on golf courses and sports fields. Follow the label closely. More is not better. Use carefully. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called A Garden So Rich. It was written by Christine Craig, and there's a quote here from C. Everett Koop, M.D., "Life affords no greater responsibility, no greater privilege than the raising of the next generation. A garden so rich." I watched out the window as they started turning over the soil. Of course, my husband did most of the work, while our 5-year-old son spent most of his energy fingering through the dirt looking for worms. Still, the sight of the two of them working, side by side, preparing the ground for a spring garden, brought a smile to my face. For just a moment, I considered joining them. And then I remembered the excitement I'd heard in my son's voice when he announced that Saturday morning, "Me and Daddy are going to plant a garden." I sipped my coffee, wondering if joining in on the fun would be interfering in a male bonding project. Right then, I heard my son call out, "Hey, Dad, bet you can't find a worm this fine." "Oh, yeah? Look at this one," my husband countered. I could see the two squirming creatures that dangled from their fingers in some sort of fine worm contest. For a second, I wondered how one went about qualifying a fine worm. Cringing, I made up my mind. This was definitely their project. I'd leave it to them. Besides, it might be more fun to stand back and simply see what grows out of this garden. I watched as they poked the seeds into the black topsoil. They planted tomatoes, squash, and green beans. I watched as they carefully transplanted the tomato plants into the ground. I listened to the spurts of laughter, the dialogue that passed back and forth. "When will they grow, Daddy?" "Soon," my husband replied. "Tonight?" "Not that soon." "Tomorrow?" my son asked. "In a few days. The seeds have to sprout, then grow." "Then we'll have vegetables?" "No, it takes a while." "One day?" my son questioned. "Longer," my husband replied. 2 days? His anxious young voice queried. I saw the smile touch my husband's expression, and at that moment I knew I was already seeing the first of many fruits the garden would bring. My son would learn that some things in life aren't instant. My husband would learn how to better deal with a 5-year-old's expectations and endless questions. Patience, what a wonderful fruit to grow. In the evenings that followed, they knelt to the ground and looked for signs of new life. The sight of them, so close and with common goals, warmed my heart and made me happy I'd decided to watch from afar. More days passed, and each afternoon I watched the two of them water their garden. My son always managed to get as wet as the garden, and more times than not, even my husband came in drenched. The laughter that followed them in made the muddy tracks and extra laundry tolerable. Well, almost tolerable. Finally, the plants appeared. From the distance, I enjoyed my son's look of glee, as well as the look of wonder on my husband's face as he, too, watched our son. And, like the tiny plants breaking through the earth, I saw fruit number 2 appear, pride. What a wonderful fruit to grow. The weeks passed, the garden grew. At the first fruit-bearing blossoms, I watched the two men in my life study and examine each plant. My son would ask questions, and my husband did his best to explain. "Why do they call squash squash?" the smallest and dirtiest gardener questioned. "I don't know," came my husband's answer. "I wonder how many worms live in this garden," my son asked. "I don't know," my husband replied. "A million? Probably. Can we catch them?" "I don't think so," my husband answered. "Will it really become a tomato?" came yet another question. "It will," my husband smiled. I smiled too, for just as plants grow, I knew I was watching a relationship take root, watching cherished moments being framed for future memories. They continued to water, to weed, and to care for their small garden. And after all the work and effort, they proudly produced 10 tomatoes, several medium-sized squash, and 3 pots of beans. One afternoon, as he placed a few dusty tomatoes on the kitchen table, my husband shook his head ruefully and said, "We probably spent 10 hours out there for each of these tomatoes. Was it worth it?" Our smiles met at the same time. There was no need to answer. Relationships, memories, patience, and pride. Who knew a garden could bear so much? That's called A Garden So Rich, written by Christy Craig, one of the many stories that make up chicken soup for the gardener's soul. And that's a Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy. And we'll be talking with you soon.